it might be nice for a Palestinian in Gaza, if they can access a television, to see a demonstration somewhere in Europe, in the United States. The reality is, within 5 minutes, an Israeli bomb is going to land near them. Israeli tanks are going to slaughter people. Israeli soldiers are going to shoot innocent victims. And nothing is going to change.
Right.
And that's just the reality.
All right. Thanks a lot, gentlemen. Former UN weapons inspector in Iraq, Mr. Scott Ritter, joining us from Bethlehem, New York. And thanks to journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnier, joining us from Brussels. And, of course, a special thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight. It's good night for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 35 to 37 of Surah Ali Imran, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dhurriyatan ba'dhuha min ba'din, wallahu samiyun alim. إذ قالت امرأة عمران رب إني نذرت لك ما في بطني محررا فتقبل مني إنك أنت السميع العليم فلما وضعتها قالت رب إني وضعتها أنثى والله أعلم بما وضعت وليس الذكر كالأنثى وإني سميتها مريم وإني أعيذها بك وذريتها من الشيطان الرجيم فتقبلها ربها بقبول حسن وأنبتها نباتا حسنا وكفلها زكريا كلما دخل عليها زكريا المحراب وجد عندها رزقا قال يا مريم أنى لك هذا قالت هو من عند الله إن الله يرزق من يشاء بغير حساب.
In the name of Allah, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful. When the wife of Imran said, My Lord, dedicate to you what is in my belly in consecration, accept it from me. Indeed, you are the All-Hearing, the All-Knowing. And when she bore her, she said, My Lord, I have borne a female child, and Allah knew better what she had borne. And the female is not like the male. I've named it Mary, and I commend her and her offspring to your care against evil of the outcast Satan. Thereupon her Lord accepted her with a gracious acceptance and made her grow up in a worthy fashion, and he charged Zechariah with her care. Whenever Zechariah visited her in the sanctuary, he would find provision with her. He said, O Mary, from where does this come for you? She said, It comes from Allah. Allah provides whomever He wishes without any reckoning.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israeli forces continue the siege of a major hospital in southern Gaza, turning it into a military base and arresting a large number of medical staff. A rights advocacy group says that Israel is committing the crime of enforced disappearance against Palestinian citizens kidnapped from Gaza. Thousands of demonstrators clashed with Israeli forces during protests against the regime's military and political failure in its onslaught on Gaza. Well, welcome to our studios in the capital, Tehran. This is news. Thanks for joining us. Israeli forces have carried out arrests at the Nasser Hospital, Gaza's largest functioning hospital, as airstrikes hit across the besieged territory. Gaza's health officials say the regime forces detained a large number of medical staff inside the hospital. They said Israeli forces turned the hospital into a military base. Regime forces raided the facilities on Thursday after laying siege on it for weeks. In the meantime, the Israeli occupation has committed 9 more massacres against families in the Gaza Strip during the past 24 hours, killing some 83 people and wounding 125 others. At least 10 civilians, including women and children, were killed by Israeli airstrikes, hitting a residential building in central Gaza and a farmland in the south of the Strip. Nearly 29,000 Palestinians have been killed and about 1.5 million displaced in the Israeli genocide in Gaza since October 7. A Palestinian NGO urges the international community to take swift action to stop the alarming rate of enforced disappearance of Palestinians from the Gaza Strip. The Palestinian Prisoner Society said despite the global outcry, Tel Aviv remains from disclosing any information about the fate of the kidnapped Palestinians. The organization also expressed concern about reports of executions and torture by Israeli soldiers. The NGO urged the international community to take swift action to stop such crimes. Last week, Geneva-based human rights group Euromed published a bombshell report saying that Israel brings groups of settlers to prisons to witness the torture of the abductees from Gaza. The Geneva-based group says the regime even allows the settlers to film the abductees as they are stripped naked and beaten with metal batons and electric sticks. The group had condemned such acts of brutality as a war crime and crime against humanity, warning that it will fuel hatred and extremism. Israeli forces have clashed with protesters in Tel Aviv during a large-scale demo against the regime's political failures. Thousands of Israelis gathered outside of the Ministry of Military Affairs and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's residence. Israeli forces beat numerous demonstrators and detained some. Protesters demanded the release of Israeli captives held by Palestinian resistance groups. The premier has been under fire for prioritizing his political interest in Gaza over the lives of the captives. Netanyahu has been in hot water as he is embroiled in a number of scandals. The Israeli premier is charged with fraud and the breach of trust. This has prompted protesters to take to the streets almost every weekend to call for his immediate resignation. UNRWA President of Guyana, Donald Rumsfeld, joined us for an exclusive interview on the Israeli genocide in Gaza. He said that UNRWA funding cuts by the U.S. and its allies are aimed at appeasing Israel and are a response to the ICJ ruling.
Well, the first instance is I would say that this is part of a legacy of colonialism in the area, in which Palestinian people were given no choice, they were given no options, they were given nothing at all when this Israel was imposed on the Palestinian state. And the problem actually started from then, because without consultation, people moving into your territory, and then what happened in 1948, which is called the Nakba, is compounding the problem, and that problem has not been resolved up to this point in time. The Palestinian people have been, in my view, the people who have been subjected to the worst type of oppression, national oppression, for more than 75 years since the occupation, since the accession of Israel came into existence. But what is taking place here today is definitely a genocide, probably comparable with the worst atrocities of Hitlerite fascism in the Second World War. The unfortunate thing is that many of the countries who were the colonial master, the countries that support this actions, are the very countries that colonialized the world, and the United States, which has become the new imperialist. I think that this, what they did with the UN agency there, was a response, in my view, to the ruling of the court, in order to satisfy Israel that they're on their side. And this was a direct attack on it, because these are mere accusations without any investigation beginning. These people are dismissed, and they immediately withheld whatever funding that they have been giving to the UN UNRWA body, giving it to them. They have withdrawn and withheld a lot of money, and that makes them complicit with the genocide and the starvation that is taking place in the Gaza Strip right now.
Hundreds of thousands of pro-Palestinian protesters have again marched through central London, calling on the British government to push for a ceasefire in Gaza and to stop its military and political support for apartheid Israel. As Saeed Purza reports, British political parties' position on the Gaza genocide has become a centerpiece of elections taking place in the UK this year.
Anger in the streets of London. Another mass protest. A turnout of hundreds of thousands. Veteran campaigners, young activists, British Jewish groups.
It's the fourth national demonstration of the year and the second one to end outside the Israeli embassy here in London. And their message, these protesters say, is clear. Stop the genocide now.
That's what they have been demanding for more than 4 months now. And the impending Israeli incursion into the southern Gaza city of Rafah, that shelters more than 1.5 million Palestinians, accounts for today's turnout, one of the largest since it all began.
We're watching these messages, we're watching these videos of people getting slaughtered on a daily basis, but we're not insensitized to this. The Western media, the Western world is desensitized to this. We won't. We will stand for our Palestinian brothers and sisters in Gaza, in the West Bank, wherever, to get rid of this cancer that is Zionism, and we're going to fight until the day that Palestine is free.
A free Palestine is yet to come. But there is a chance for British politicians to stop the ongoing mass slaughter. On February 21st, MPs, representatives of the British public, will be voting on a second ceasefire motion. The first such vote, November last year, didn't pass muster. We asked Ben Jamal of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign what message a no vote would send to the Palestinians.
It will deliver a message to the Palestinian people that the British Parliament says your lives don't matter. The message we've delivered today is that they do matter to the British people, and that now the British Parliament needs to start listening to what the British people are saying.
The political party's position on Israel's genocidal war on Gaza has taken center stage in this year's upcoming general elections in the UK. And the protesters here say it determines which way their vote will go. Saeed Purza, London.
South Koreans, Palestinians, and supporters of Palestine have once again hit the streets of Seoul. The protest comes as Israel intensifies its bombardments on the southern Gaza city of Rafah and what protesters here call war crimes and genocide. They demand an end to Israeli attacks and a ceasefire, as well as an end to the blanket support for Israel by the U.S. and its allies. Frank Smith has more from Seoul.
Palestinians and their supporters took their message to the streets of the South Korean capital, Seoul, again, as Israel's onslaught on Gaza continues unabated. Palestinians in Seoul reminded the participants of the accounts of the Israeli army's indiscriminate killing of innocents in the besieged territory.
Do you know the story of Hin, the Palestinian girl who lost her life recently? She was surrounded by Israeli tanks for 3 hours before being shot dead by Israeli soldiers.
Global support for Palestinians is growing.
Never give up. Because if we do, who will stand next to the children who are dying in Gaza right now?
Israel's attacks on Rafah, a city with 1.5 million Palestinian refugees, have galvanized people around the world with demands for access to humanitarian aid and the establishment of a ceasefire.
This demonstration is taking place within sight of the U.S. Embassy for a reason. Supporters of Palestine, like those here today, argue that the U.S. enables Tel Aviv's genocide in the Gaza Strip with its ongoing support of Israel, unconditional military and economic support. They argue that backing needs to stop.
Critics of U.S. policy say a full-scale invasion of Rafah would further incite anti-American sentiment worldwide.
The United States continues its enormous support for Israel. They are talking about peace with words, but it's a lie and hypocrisy, as even now, they provide huge amounts of aid and weapons for Israel.
Demonstrators then march through the center of the capital to get their message to people on this global day of action in support of Palestinians, passing by a focal point of their frustration, the American Embassy. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Thousands of people in the German city of Munich have held a protest rally against NATO policies, especially towards Russia.
My opinion is that we urgently need peace with Russia again. Our real enemy is in America. They are not our allies. They are our enemies. They have carried out terrorist attacks on our infrastructure and now want to drag us into a big war. I'm against it.
With the eastward expansion of NATO, we directly forced Putin to take this action. Otherwise, NATO soldiers would soon be taking the metro in Moscow.
Protesters waved anti-war banners and chanted, "We need dialogue, not conflict." The demonstrators called for a halt to military interventions and conflicts around the world. The protest was held around the venues of the Munich Security Conference, where world leaders have gathered to discuss the security challenges facing the world. Since the beginning of the Russia-Ukraine war almost 2 years ago, NATO countries, led by the U.S., have provided tens of billions of dollars in military aid to Kiev. Moscow says the aid is fueling the conflict, while the Western public is also growing increasingly wary of the military support. Thousands of supporters of Pakistan's former Prime Minister Imran Khan have taken to the streets nationwide to condemn what they perceive as fraud and the manipulation of the recent general elections. This comes in light of admissions by certain election officials acknowledging their involvement in the alleged vote rigging. Our correspondent Nasser Kazmi has more from the Pakistani capital, Islamabad.
Supporters of the jailed Pakistani former Premier Imran Khan and his party, Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf or PTI, held nationwide protests on Saturday to condemn alleged manipulation in the February 8 general election.
The mandate that the people of Pakistan has given the independent, so-called independent candidates backed by none other than PTI, because our election symbol was taken away. Our entire leadership is behind jails with sham, aapke jo mukadmaat hai. So this doesn't make any sense. When the people have spoken, they have to be respected. Otherwise, they will be on the street. It will be chaos. And no government, no political party will be able to rule.
Supporters of Imran Khan's party insist that widespread electoral manipulation has deprived their party of achieving 2/3 majority in the parliament.
I voted for Imran Khan, but I'm speaking as a Pakistani voter. I voted, I was there at 7:45 in the morning. I wanted to be first in line so that I could vote. By evening, our candidate was winning, everything was fine. 3 in the morning, suddenly the man lost, and he lost by 20,000 votes or God knows something like that. How is this possible? This is not possible and this is not acceptable.
However, Imran Khan's rival political group, Pakistan Muslim League Nawaz, says the PTI party tried to derail democracy by creating controversy around elections. A dramatic change in the political climate occurred when the commissioner of Rawalpindi, a city in northern Pakistan, tendered his resignation, citing a guilty conscience for his role in enabling widespread electoral manipulation in the garrison city.
We converted the losers into winners with 70,000 votes margin. The chief election commissioner and chief justice are involved in poll fraud. I accept all the responsibility. I should be hanged. I cannot participate in the crime that could destroy Pakistan.
This is while Pakistan's election commission has rejected claims made by the Rawalpindi commissioner, stating that no official of the electoral body gave any direction to him regarding the manipulation of results.
The outcry over alleged vote rigging in the recently held elections for national and state legislatures has sparked widespread protests among multiple political factions. Analysts warn that the absence of a clear mandate for any political party could lead to prolonged political instability and hinder efforts to address economic challenges of the country. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Iran has unveiled fully homegrown defensive weaponry. The military hardware includes an anti-ballistic missile system as well as a low-altitude air defense system. Gisumi Shahmadi reports from Tehran.
Guarding the homeland against the threats from above, Iran's defense ministry has unveiled advanced air defense systems, further strengthening its position as one of the few countries that have acquired the technology involved in the detection, tracking, interception, and destruction of attacking missiles, both long-range and short-range.
Today, we are witnessing major achievements that have significantly increased our defense capabilities. The Arman anti-ballistic missile defense system is named after martyr Arman Aliverdi. It is classified as a tactical air defense system. Arman is equipped with a domestically made Sayyar 3 class, and it is capable of simultaneously detecting and tracking 24 targets at a distance ranging from 120 to 180 kilometers.
This new cutting-edge defensive weapon is also equipped with a self-protection system that makes it immune to potential low-altitude threats. The Arman Defense System's radars and missile launchers have been incorporated into a single vehicle to enhance agility in defensive operations, allowing it to engage in operation in less than 3 minutes.
Azarakhsh, the other system we are unveiling today, is a low-altitude defense system. It's considered a versatile defense weapon that can be installed on different types of vehicles. This adds to its mobility and makes it ideal for agile responses. Therefore, it can be used to provide security for protected areas.
The state-of-the-art technology applied in both of the newly unveiled military hardware enhances defensive posture and boosts deterrence to adversary aggression, significantly increasing Iran's air defense capabilities once they are added to the country's military fleet.
What you witness today is quite significant because defensive capabilities and air defense in particular can tip the scales in any aggression and war. That is why this kind of deterrence is crucial for our country, a lesson that we learned the hard way, because before the Islamic Revolution, we used to import everything from other countries.
Iran has made remarkable breakthroughs in manufacturing a broad range of homegrown military hardware in line with the policy to strengthen its defense capabilities, a red line that will never be up for any kind of negotiation.
Iran has come a long way over the past 45 years in its defense capabilities, becoming fully self-sufficient, turning from a country that had to import the military hardware that it needed to one that today is producing all the military equipment that it needs and also developing new ones. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
On Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary, O possessor of pardon and good pleasure. From wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For Thou art Allah, the best guardian, and Thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before Thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with Thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to Thee, addressing myself to Thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to You for the hope of Your rewards. So, bless Muhammad, the best of Thy creation, the summoner to Thy truth. Exalt me with Thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with Thy eye, which never sleeps. and seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely, thou art the all-forgiving, the all-compassionate.
The Zionist regime continues to inflict conditions of life calculated to bring about the physical destruction of Palestinians in Gaza by attacking hospitals, a key feature of its military campaign across the territory. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Israeli regime troops escalated their attacks on a major hospital in Khan Yunis, southern Gaza, recently. News reports confirm that Egypt is clearing land in northern Sinai to contain people displaced from Gaza in what appears to be a contingency plan for a mass exodus, which Cairo says it opposes. The development is heightening fears that the threatened incursion into Rafah, where more than 1 million people are concentrated after the Zionist regime ordered the evacuation of other areas of Gaza, would entail not only a bloodbath, but also a mass expulsion of Palestinians from the land. The majority of Gaza's population of 2.3 million Palestinians are already refugees, following the ethnic cleansing around the time of the Zionist regime's establishment in 1948. The child killer regime of Israel prohibits those refugees from exercising the right of return, enshrined in international law as part of its regime of apartheid, facilitating the colonization of Palestinian land. The International Committee of the Red Cross said an escalation of violence in Rafah poses a disastrous risk to civilian lives and infrastructure. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs stated recently that escalated airstrikes on Rafah and fears of an Israeli regime military ground operation have reportedly led to the movement of people out of Gaza's southernmost governorate toward Deir al-Balah, in the middle area of the territory. Responding to an urgent intervention from South Africa, the International Court of Justice said recently that the perilous situation in Gaza, particularly in Rafah, demands immediate and effective implementation of the provisional measures indicated by the court late last month, but declined to issue any new orders. Those measures call on the Zionist regime to prevent violations of the Genocide Convention, including killing or causing serious bodily or mental harm to Palestinians as a protected group and deliberately inflicting conditions of life calculated to bring about their physical destruction in whole or in part. The court also prohibited the Zionist regime from imposing measures intended to prevent birth within the group. The fabricated regime of Israel has ignored those measures, killing around 3,000 more Palestinians since the court issued its interim ruling, with the Palestinian Health Ministry giving a fatality figure of at least 28,775 since October 7th.
Thousands more Palestinians are missing and presumed dead under the rubble, while an untold number of Palestinians have been martyred from hunger and disease in a secondary wave of mortality resulting from the Zionist regime's military offensive and engineered famine. Hossam Abu Safiyeh, doctor at Kamal Adwan Hospital in northern Gaza, said recently that several children have died in recent days due to thirst and malnutrition amid the general situation of hunger and a spread of disease. Nursing mothers are malnourished, the doctor added, affecting the health of their babies. Al Jazeera footage from Kamal Adwan Hospital shows emaciated child patients who were seriously injured after being targeted by Israeli regime aircraft while their family was looking for food. According to Al Jazeera reporter Anas Sharif, they are now in grave danger due to food and medical shortages. Food insecurity in Gaza City and northern Gaza has especially reached an extremely critical state, given significant restrictions on the delivery of humanitarian assistance. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs said recently, the UN Office added, in Rafah, humanitarian conditions have become increasingly severe, with continued reports of people stopping aid trucks to take food. The Zionist regime continues to inflict conditions of life calculated to bring about the physical destruction of Palestinians in Gaza by attacking hospitals, a key feature of its military campaign across the territory. The UN Human Rights Office stated recently that it was deeply worried by reports of the Zionist regime's raid on Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis, southern Gaza, where thousands of displaced people had been sheltering. Israeli regime troops stormed the medical complex, described by the head of the World Health Organization as the backbone of the health system in southern Gaza, after cutting supplies for a week and ordering its evacuation. The UN Human Rights Office added, the raid appears to be part of a pattern of attacks by Israeli regime forces striking essential life-saving civilian infrastructure in Gaza, especially hospitals. The UN said, with nearly 70,000 people reportedly injured during this conflict and a nearly collapsed health system due to attacks on facilities and restrictions on essential humanitarian supplies, the impact on civilians is appalling. The Zionist regime troops ordered patients, including people in intensive care and nursery units, to a different building, exposing patients to grave risks, including the risk of death for the most vulnerable. The UN office said, echoing testimony from medical staff at Nasser Medical Complex sent to the Electronic Intifada.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
And we're back with yet another episode of Gaza Under Attack. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. I'm Saeed Pourreza in London. Let's get started with a quick review of the latest developments. The U.S.-Israeli genocidal war on Gaza rages on. Occupation forces' incursion into Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis has led to the deaths of at least four patients after electricity was severed and oxygen supplies cut. Apartheid Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu rejects the recognition of a Palestinian state ahead of a planned incursion into the southern Gaza city of Rafah, where more than 1.5 million people are sheltering. Tel Aviv's staunchest ally, the United States, says a ground attack on Rafah would be a disaster without a plausible evacuation plan, a warning echoed by the U.S. High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi. If it went ahead, the ground invasion could displace hundreds of thousands of Palestinians across the Rafah frontier into Egypt. Video has emerged of the Egyptians building a buffer zone, a refugee camp, despite their opposition to the displacement of Palestinians. The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah says the regional resistance axis is resolved to liberate Palestine from Israeli occupation and aggression, no matter the cost. The U.S.-led Israeli ethnic cleansing campaign in the Gaza Strip has so far killed nearly 29,000 Palestinians and wounded some 69,000 others, 70% of the casualties, women and children. That's 250 a day, according to Oxfam. Joining me to unpack all this and more is in the studio Fatima Merchant. Fatima is a protest coordinator and social media manager. She has been an avid campaigner for human rights and is the co-host of the Liberated Voices podcast. And joining us via Skype is Mick Napier, a dedicated anti-racism campaigner and member of the Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign. Thank you both for joining me. I will start with you, Fatima, and I'm going to get your thoughts on Rafah in the south of Gaza ahead of this looming, seemingly imminent Israeli incursion.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure, as always.
Pleasure is ours.
So what we are seeing, of course, is an increasing audacity from Israel and from Netanyahu. We knew that this was coming. You only have to look back, not even 75 years, to know that this has been coming. When these Palestinians were pushed into southern Gaza, it was never that they were going to be safe. So we have expected this. We knew it was coming. And it now depends on what level of humanity the rest of the world has. And we are the ones truly being put to test to see how much we actually care.
And Mick, there are heartbreaking scenes emerging, images showing blast craters near camps, the Nasser Hospital in catastrophic conditions after the occupation forces, troops raided the facilities. How much more can we watch on from the sidelines?
I mean, it's so barbaric. And every day, almost every week, brings more barbarism. I think it's difficult to overestimate how shocking, how this is burning deeply into the international psyche when people see what's happening as they've never seen before. You know, every patient in the intensive care unit dead, all the neonates, all the newly born babies in another intensive care unit, all dead, all killed. Palestinian children's corpses lying around and eaten by dogs while Israeli snipers prevent anyone giving them a decent burial. It's beyond human language almost to describe and to respond to this verbally. So what can you say?
It's beyond human language to describe it, if that's okay. But talking about the leaders, you know, around the world, especially in the Western world, it's an example of psychopathy that we don't see these leaders stepping forward and calling for a permanent cessation of the unfolding genocide.
Not only are they not stepping forward, we have to remind ourselves that Netanyahu phoned Biden and phoned Rishi Sunak as well before the genocidal attacks began. So he knows he needs a green light. He received a green light. and then the genocide began. Now, any student of history will know that America is perfectly capable of genocide. In fact, it's born out of genocide. But it's also perfectly capable in the modern era of killing 3 million Indochinese in a war of aggression. The French are capable of killing 1.5 million Algerians to maintain their control over another part of the Arab world. So this is incredibly horrific. 250 people, you know, killed or murdered by bombs or executed face to face. It's getting pretty close to the death rate in Auschwitz. So our governments are very comfortable financing and protecting this genocide. What they're not comfortable doing is having an election and knowing that they have no mandate in popular opinion in their countries for these atrocities. So in a sense, there's always been, every time there's an Israeli massacre, they call it mowing the lawn. That is 2014, 2009, they go in and they kill 1,000 or more Palestinians. And there's always a race between how quickly popular revulsion builds up to danger point for these governments and how long they give the Israelis to do the killing. It seems now Biden is saying, or Blinken is saying, slow down the killing, kill a few people less, or perhaps give us something to offer public opinion in America, because it's built against this genocide very strongly.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Auschwitz. A lot of people, of course, are already calling what's happening in the Gaza Strip as the Gaza Holocaust, befittingly. I want to switch gears here a little, if possible. And clearly, Mick, there is a price to be paid for speaking up for Palestine at the moment. I know you don't like to talk about yourself, but could you perhaps bring us up to speed with your current issue with the Scottish courts, where you had initially been brought up on terrorism charges?
I don't want to talk about it too much, but look, every time there's a massacre, 2009, 2014, 2021, today, then charges are pressed, you know, ridiculous charges of racism, which are always kicked out in the courts. And currently, it was very recently, charges of terrorism. Because at a big rally in Glasgow, I said, I thanked Hamas, I thanked the Palestinian resistance for proving, by winning elections and then the Palestinians being punished, for proving that British commitment to democracy is a complete sham. It's just not there. And I also thanked the Palestinians in Gaza, the resistance, sorry, Hamas specifically, for breaking out of the concentration camp on October the 7th, because any other people anywhere in the world would try to do the same if they were subjected to what the Palestinians have been subjected to for the last almost 2 decades, and the last 75 years, actually. So that led to being arrested, snatched by police a very short time in the cells, and then they attempted to pin the charge of terrorism on me. But they didn't go ahead with it, because had we gone to court, we would have had a fantastic opportunity to explain precisely why every decent person in the world, without exception, would support the Palestinian right to resist the Palestinian resistance. So they backed off, but they'll be back again. But it's low-level harassment compared to what people have to suffer. 124 dead Palestinian journalists for standing up for their rights. Really, it's low-grade harassment. Some people who are vulnerable, will be deterred by this. But people like David Miller and many other people who stand up and fight, we always win.
Absolutely. More of the amazing discussion in just a few minutes, but let's hear from the Palestinian foreign minister, Riyad al-Maliki, who has met with his Greek counterpart about aid for the Gaza Strip and how to help the Palestinians in the besieged enclave. Al-Maliki shared his thoughts during a news briefing in Athens alongside Greek foreign minister George Garafitridis. Let's have a listen.
For us, this is very important, and therefore we talked about how to stop the invasion into Rafah. We talked about how to bring humanitarian aid into the Gaza Strip, which is certainly scarce due to the barriers and conditions that Israel places on the entry of such aid, and this aid must enter in large quantities and must enter to all areas including the northern Gaza Strip. We talked about preventing displacement, regardless of its names, this displacement that aims to expel the Palestinian people from the Gaza Strip abroad. The terrorism and violence of the settlers, which increases its ferocity in the West Bank, is a result of the encouragement they receive from the Israeli government, specifically from some ministers in the Israeli government who are terrorists in every sense of the word, taking lands, building illegal settlements, attacking villages, burning houses and vehicles, cutting down trees and shooting massively at all innocent civilians.
The Palestinian foreign minister there, Fatima, we heard what the foreign minister had to say. He's been doing the diplomatic rounds. We saw him with the Arab bloc at the UN earlier in the week and now in Athens. Is it having any impact at all?
Well, Saeed, there is an impact. The extent of that impact, we're yet to see. I would say that something that Mick mentioned earlier is key to focus on here. There are elements that coincide with the Holocaust. And when we look at that, we need to see that there is a voice that is coming from Palestine, and there is sort of a representative that can speak on what's happening from that perspective. In terms of what's happened on October 7th compared to what has been happening since and even prior to October 7th, there needs to be a voice and there needs to be people calling out what terrorism looks like, mm-hmm. be it from the Holocaust then or even this Holocaust now potentially. Mm-hmm. So it's important that we do have this minister going around and having these diplomatic discussions. Whether or not it's going to impact foreign policy, I'm not sure. It's not information that people didn't already know. It's just simply, even just having that person there as a representative holds power in itself.
Mm-hmm. Let me go to Mick now. The matter of the Israeli onslaught, Mick, is clearly an international issue. This is becoming less and less limited to only the Gaza Strip. But is it the case that until the chief accomplice, Washington, acts, the rest are just screaming into the void here?
I don't believe it. I think if America decided to stop the genocide, they could do so very quickly indeed. But it doesn't mean that the EU lacks in power. The EU is Israel's biggest trading partner. They give Israel sweetheart deals. They give them privileged access to markets. They have very intimate scientific and technical cooperation. And all of this could be used as leverage against Israel if the EU decided to do so. So it's purely a matter of will. Look, Israel is about 6 million Zionist Jews and another million non-Zionist Jews, surrounded by a few hundred million Arabs and other people in the Middle East who know what Israel is doing, that it's a Jewish supremacist state. The only thing that Israel can possibly stop Israel is force. Now, that force can be military, it can be economic internationally, it can be popular, revulsion and political action. But ultimately, unless Israel is stopped by these varieties of resistance, after they deal with the Palestinians successfully through ethnic cleansing, God forbid, then other people in the Middle East will be in their crosshairs. Having created a monster, Britain, and then the USA, aided by the EU, begins to fear this monster. We see ministers in Belgium and in Spain beginning to call for action against Israel. But, it's such a monstrous regime that sometimes if you have a big attack dog, it might bite you. And I think that's a possibility at the moment. But resistance is the only way to save the people of the Middle East from a cataclysm. This is a monstrous regime. If you can kill 500 people in a hospital in one night and you have 100 atom bombs and hydrogen bombs, this is a danger to the whole world, for sure.
For sure. You speak of resistance. I was watching The Wanted 18 last night. It's a form of resistance that came in the form of buying cows from the Israelis, and how that went for those of our viewers who are interested. They may want to watch that. It is ongoing, of course. It has been going on for decades. But what I would like to ask you is that this is a historic moment, of course, Fatima, that will have future generations asking why we didn't do more. How do you think people who will come after us, the future generations, judge or look upon today's leaders who could have done more, could have stopped it today, but did not?
Well, we tend to see history repeating itself over and over. The difference is that now, with the avenues of information that we have, the younger generation are seeing live what is happening. So whilst our generation might have learnt about genocides and history lessons or whatnot, it's from a biased perspective still. You need to understand that. When it's being taught to you, mm-hmm. especially in the UK, you're being taught by the colonisers what they did. That is true to an extent for the younger generation now, but they're seeing it more from a social media perspective, which is unbiased, still biased, but less. So they know the truth. They're growing up seeing those people killed in Rafah, in Gaza. They're seeing all of the atrocities live. I mean, it's not the same as previous wars or conflicts where you didn't see the little girls hanging without legs.
Yeah.
You didn't see all of these atrocities. Our younger people are seeing them. They're seeing the bloodshed. They're seeing the mothers holding their babies wrapped in cloth, and it's terrifying to them. Yeah. So not only are they being traumatized now, this is a trauma they will carry on.
Mm-hmm.
So when they become adults and when they do become of voting age, they will hold our political leaders to account.
Mm-hmm. And of course, they see, as you said, the lies, the double standards as well. While we're in the UK, as long as the UK government doesn't listen to the voice of its people and demand a ceasefire in Palestine, demonstrations will continue. That, according to the campaigners from the Newcastle Stop the War Coalition, speaking at a recent protest in London against the unfolding genocide in Gaza. Have a listen.
We're here to stop the genocide and try to spread the message about Palestine. Obviously, we're with a group, all of us, and Stop the Campaign. All of us are here from Newcastle, Stop the Campaign, and PSA and FOA are here. They're somewhere around the crowds. We are here for one message, ceasefire. We want a ceasefire in the UK. We want innocent people stop getting killed.
Okay, we're demonstrating for an immediate ceasefire. We're putting pressure on Rishi Sunak and on the British government and demanding that all of our politicians hold Israel to account. And we are holding our politicians to account, demanding that they represent us, that we want peace and justice in Palestine. We keep demonstrating in the hope that it will make an impact on the political decisions that our government makes, but they need to know that they will pay a price and politicians will pay a price if they don't represent our voices and they don't do what we are saying, which is a very simple demand. It's the bare minimum, which is that there is a ceasefire in Palestine. A huge number of people are very disillusioned with politicians, and people will make their own decisions about how they vote, but the message is if you don't call for a ceasefire, then you don't deserve our vote.
Meantime, the World Health Organization says a field hospital in Gaza, set up to receive some 200 patients a day, is receiving up to 700, nearly half of them severe trauma cases. The WHO's Dr. Richard Pieperkorn made the comment while visiting a field hospital set up by the NGO International Medical Corps in Rafah. He expressed concern over an expected ramping up of fighting in the southern Gaza city, which could quickly overwhelm an already severely depleted medical system.
We have seen this, of course, with other hospitals. When military activities come close to a hospital, staff cannot attend the hospital, patients cannot access the hospital, WHO cannot bring in their supplies, and the hospital very quickly becomes partially functional, barely functional, and non-functional. This is one of the hospitals we need, and we need to keep it for a long time.
Let's continue the discussion with my guests, Fatima Merchant and Mick Napier, as we enter the final stretch of the show. And I go to Mick first. Worrying signs, Mick, over there, that even the field hospitals are in danger of being overwhelmed, and we're still not at the worst of things. Can you, based on your experience, of course, of observing these conflicts, draw a picture of how worse things can't really get?
They cannot get much worse. This has been building for a very long time. The Israelis have a hideous expertise in ethnic cleansing. They're born out of ethnic cleansing as a state, and it's never stopped. This comes back to the level of 1948, however, when gangs go into villages, towns, line up the young men and old men and young and boys, and execute them in front of their family in order to instill fear. Numerous examples of this. The Israelis have the world's greatest expertise in this kind of ethnic cleansing. How can it get worse? Just more of the same. I mean, will the Egyptians allow a million people to be pushed over the border into Sinai? Will they fight? Nothing suggests that they will. And if you go to bed with Israel, as the Egyptians have done since the 70s, your options become very limited. The ability to fight atrophies. But people have to fight. Otherwise, I fear this will be Rwanda on steroids. This will be a successful ethnic cleansing. I don't think the outcome is guaranteed. It depends upon the resistance of people across the Middle East. And we are so inspired by the Yemenis, who are enforcing international law to protect people in danger of genocide. And for their pains, they're being bombed by the British and the Americans. This is so clear. You know, Ronald Reagan used the phrase the empire of evil to talk about America's enemies. But millions and millions of people around the globe now realize what the empire of evil is. And its capitals are Washington, London, and Brussels.
Correct. In speaking of inspiration, that is shared by millions of people, hundreds of millions of people around the world, and no less the people here in the UK. Weekend protests for months now. There's another national one taking place this weekend. And as we heard the activists say earlier, they're not going to stop unless and until the British government changes its position. How do you see that? I haven't lived here for a long time, but I think this level of commitment is really unprecedented.
Absolutely. I think that we've not seen this level of commitment before. I've been organising protests for a long time now, and even I'm shocked seeing that the turnout isn't dwindling. And it's amazing to see that people are willing to come out weekend after weekend after weekend to fight for what they believe is right, for human rights. Yeah. And we are seeing more and more that our government, be it a democracy, doesn't seem to reflect what the people want. And more people are getting frustrated and are willing to come out. So this is something that will escalate. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's something that will quieten down with our government's silence. I think that the more silent they are and the more complicit the UK becomes, the more the people will stand up. So when you are going to protest, I would say to any viewers listening that you are having a direct impact. Mm-hmm. You may feel as though it's something that you're just going to be doing every weekend, you know, and it doesn't really make a difference whether or not you show up yourself, but it does. It makes a massive difference.
Exactly. It's that knowledge that keeps galvanizing people to turn out weekend after weekend. Final question to Mick. And briefly, if you may, Mick, Palestine is now a political issue, and with a ceasefire vote looming in the British Parliament, talk about the significance of this vote and the message the outcome of it will send.
It's very difficult to tell because we have a pro-genocide government and a pro-genocide opposition. I think, you know, come the next election, we'll be able to vote UK-wide for two parties, each of which supports the Israeli genocide. That's clear. I don't think demonstrating, as we do every week and as we will do in Glasgow tomorrow in a Scottish demonstration, is enough. We defeated the American militarists in Vietnam because they began to be afraid of a mass movement getting out of control. In Glasgow this week, we saw an arms company shut down for a day. We've seen students occupy buildings. We need to go beyond an electoral focus in order to create the conditions where the government realizes it will be more dangerous to continue supporting genocide than to retreat.
Okay, and that does it for this episode. Fatima Merchant and Mick Napier, thank you for your time, and thank you. Join us again next time for more. Until then, continue to keep Palestine in your hearts. Goodbye.
in the limelight.
One of the most profound awakenings for Westerners since the launch of the Palestinian resistance operation Al-Aqsa Storm has been their understanding of how influential the Zionist lobby is. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV noted, the Zionist lobby, which works in line with the U.S. State Department when it can and independently and subversively when it cannot, tends to influence major arenas of societal interest. On the surface level, one can simply follow the money and understand the phenomenon. The Israeli lobby pouring millions of dollars into buying U.S. politicians. Zionist hate groups unleashed to stifle pro-Palestinian students on college campuses. Celebrities and artists flown out to Israel to pose with Israeli occupation soldiers in order to paint them in a positive light. However, more devious and subversive groups exist within American society, specifically designed to normalize the concept of not only an Israeli regime, but the imperialist settler ideology of Zionism. These organizations are designed with the American